Thank you, and thank you to the organizers. When Shripak called me last spring and asked me to make this presentation, I said no. I said, Shripak, I'm not doing any research on bed bugs, and I've seen what Deanie Miller goes through and what Harold Harlan has done for all those years to keep bed bugs, and I don't intend on rearing bed bugs anytime soon. He said, well, you don't have to be doing research. We want your perspective, so lucky you. What I'm going to give you is my extension perspective, and obviously I finally acquiesced. Guilt got the better part of me, but I'm glad I did, because it made me approach the bed bug issue as an extension entomologist, the guy who was answering the phone, as a specialist for county agents, pest control operators, and homeowners, probably in a different manner than I would have for the last, well, 6 months at least, if not more. Delved me into the readings, especially Usinger's monograph, Asimicity. That was very interesting, and I probably never would have read that otherwise. The meetings that I... And I won't say I read it cover to cover, I didn't. The meetings that I've attended, both regionally, pest control meetings, industry meetings, and now scientific meetings. Phone calls, I started to keep a log and a list of calls that I got from homeowners, and I keep very scanty logs, like who called and what the topic is, but I don't have a list of questions, but I did this past year. I'm not gonna go in formally into those, but I basically interviewed the PMPs that called me, the pest management professionals, and the clients that called me, the homeowners, and kept tabs on sort of the mood out there on bed bugs. And then I made quite a few treatment visits, which was also very good for me to see how pest control operators are doing it, both good and bad. And I hope this fits into the theme, though that was not my intent originally, with making connections at ESA, and to remind all of you that we are part of a tripart mission, whether you're at a land-grant school or not, of extension research and teaching. And this is key. This issue of bed bugs is very important to marry, to continue to marry the research, the extension, and the teaching as we go through with these aspects. Now, if I had been really creative, I would have had an acronym here like bed bugs bite or something like that for all my pitfalls. But I guess I wasn't feeling very creative. So these are the pitfalls, and this is my opinion. This is my experience of the last half a year or so, that some of the things that I'm seeing. You may agree with some of these, you may have a different word for them, and some of these definitely overlap. But I'm going to talk about misidentification, false expectations, both by the pest management professionals, client false expectations that I see, I'm really talking about homeowners there, or folks, you know, that own the property, poor preparation, lack of research-based information, not slighting anyone here, but research-based information, lack of our experience with bed bugs, modern-day experience, a little bit on bed bug morphology, biology, behavior, poor product selection, application, and placement, and the specter that rises for any of us in extension entomology, and you can have various names for this, but some form of parasitosis. Misidentification. Not so far on when the bed bugs started to reemerge, I would get bed bugs sent in, especially young nymphs, that the PCOs out there, the PMPs, thought were cockroach nymphs, and I had that several times this year. It wasn't until I read the monograph on Asimicity that I realized how big that family was. And this is probably going to change as the molecular guys get hold of this whole area, if it hasn't changed already. But I was amazed. 22 genera, 74 species in the Asimicids, 12 that attack bats. I knew there were several. I didn't know there were 12. 9 that attack birds, and 3 species on man. Of course, we're talking about Lectularis. Hemipterus apparently is out there too. And I noticed Shripak avoided the one from Africa, the Leptocymax. He didn't say the species name. I hope that's named after a person and not a body part, because I don't want a bed bug biting my booty. But this is quite realistic, and I multiple times get in, probably 3 times this year, on bat bugs and 2 bird bug situations where the PCO, the homeowner, the client felt they had bed bugs. I said, send them in. They sent them in, and they were not bed bugs. They were either one of the bat bugs or one of the bird bugs. So we need to keep that in mind. That is a pitfall, obviously. If you make a misidentification, right? We all know that. Know the species. Know what you're dealing with. I never assume it's bed bugs. I want to see the bug, and I want to make an identification. Now, it's fairly easy to make an identification, thanks for the CDC guides and the wonderful publications such as the MPMA Field Guide, and I see Eric Smith in the audience today, Although I must say that, you know, I have to key it out carefully because some of these key characters are a little difficult to see, especially lots of times you're going to have the antennae broken, and you'll see that the length of the third and fourth antennal segments is key for making an identification. And also, a lot of us know that bat bugs just tend to be hairier, with the hairs longer than the width of the eye. But if you don't have a bat bugs or bed bugs or bird bugs on hand, or if you're just sort of doing it out in the field with a hand lens, some of these characters can be difficult. So that can be a pitfall. So you definitely need to make a proper identification and not just assume you have a bed bug problem. You might have a bird problem. You might have a bat problem. It's false expectations by the pest management professionals. Ooh, underestimating. I think we're getting the word out with the research and meetings such as this, but underestimation of the time you're going to need to spend to do a decent inspection, to find all those proper problem areas, and then ultimately doing the treatment itself. And I think this has led to a lot of underpricing of jobs, where the PCOs are finding they have to go back and back again and back again, and they should be because they need to, but they priced the job wrong. That's probably changing, but that has been a problem, I think, with some pest control companies, especially those who are small man companies, maybe don't come all to all the meetings we all go to, and don't have the benefits of the information that's being transformed or talked about at the meetings. Client stress, and this will get back, this will come through the whole thing, but you know these clients are under a lot of stress, and I think PCOs can underestimate just how stressed the individuals are. We're not psychologists, we're pest control professionals, we're entomologists, but these folks are very, very stressed. This can lead to underpreparing the client of what the client is going to have to go through. A lot of pest control operators don't have a client checklist of what they should go through to prepare the room to get it ready for a serious treatment. The client then might think it's easier than it is. And then this will go to my poor preparation, the treatment site itself takes an awful lot of work. You have to be careful to oversell the issues. I think maybe we're backing off on that, but I think some PCOs that I've dealt with have oversold the issue of the bed bug control that they're going to get, and this can come back and bite them ultimately with legal issues. And all you have to do is type in on Google bed bugs and lawsuits, and you will see all sorts of information about the lawsuits that are out there. False expectations by the clients. They too underestimate the problem. They're used to going to Home Depot, Lowe's, or whatever, and getting that product off the shelf to fog their room. I wrote down one quote here that homeowner says, when we were talking about that their bed would probably have to be treated, they said, "I don't want to poison my bed. I want to poison the air they breathe." And they want to use a fogger to poison the air the bed bugs breathe. They don't want to poison their bed. That was a conception, an expectation of the homeowner out there. That homeowner also said, too, it's another stressed homeowner, flies, cockroach, and termites I can deal with, but these things are eating me. So the homeowners themselves, they're used to going out to the store, and this has really led to my change. You know, I used to basically say, an educated homeowner with the right tools and information can do a lot of their pest control if it's simple. We never recommend termite control for homeowners, and I don't recommend bed bug control for homeowners, for clients. They just cannot handle it, in my opinion. The media hype, we talked a little bit about the media hype that's certainly out there, and that can bring it to the other side of the issue, where you might underestimate the problem. If the media is hyping it up so high, it can make false expectations for the people out there that bed bugs are everywhere, there's nothing you can do about it, and certainly they're not everywhere, and there's plenty you can do about it, but it can make it very difficult for all of us. It's a pitfall. Poor preparation, again, not understanding what you have to go through. And I see Mike Potter out in the audience, Gary Bennett out in the audience, and many of you who have written and presented of what you have to do to prepare the site. I went on a number of sites, some good and some bad. The ones that were good, where control was eventually obtained, spent an awful lot of time preparing those structures properly. You can also, again, this goes back to my false expectations, you can underprepare the homeowner if you're not careful of what they need to do, what they should do, and what you as the pest management professional is going to have to do as far as clearing out that problem account, the treatment you're going to have to do, and the repeated visits, I think, in most cases are going to be needed. Fortunately for me as an extension specialist, there are websites out there, I have my own out there, again, I'm giving kudos here to Mike. Mike has an excellent fact sheet. I send many homeowners to the University of Kentucky bed bug fact sheet page because they need to be educated to understand what they're into. This goes along too with the non-chemical strategies. I don't have time to go into all these aspects, but obviously the accurate identification, the education of the customers, and also the point, and those cockroach people know this, that sanitation alone won't eliminate them. You know, why do I have bed bugs? I'm not a dirty person. No, you're not a dirty person. But sanitation alone won't get rid of cockroach problems. Sanitation alone won't get rid of bed bug problems. It's still a very key component to the overall management strategies for bed bugs. The best PCOs that I dealt with this past year had a customer pre-treat checklist where the cleaning was involved, instructions on cleaning, discarding furniture if possible or if necessary, discarding of beds if possible or necessary, removing clutter, bagging, moving beds away from walls, and the initial vacuuming, sort of extreme vacuuming, but then followed up by the pest management professionals doing their own vacuuming of the walls, the ceilings, pulling up the carpet, getting underneath the carpet, and using stiff adapters on the vacuum cleaner, not soft brush adapters on the vacuum cleaners. The steam cleaning that's out there and the encasement, again, I'm not going to go into that, but that has become part of a multifaceted approach. I get a lot of these questions, and this is my lack of research-based information, and these are the questions: will they hurt my children? How long do they live? What should I do to avoid them? How far do they forage, especially the pest control operators? What can I use to monitor them, especially the pest control operators? Do they feed on my pets? How do I really know they are gone? What is the best treatment? Question mark. And most people, especially the clients, want the one silver bullet, which we all know is not out there. And then part of the stress factor, why me? Well, fortunately, I hope if I gave this talk next year, this would not be one of my pitfalls, because a lot of research is coming down the pike. Again, I congratulate the ESA for reprinting the monograph Simicity by Usinger from 1966. That has been very helpful, at least to me. I could have picked a number of articles here. I didn't because of space and time, but it's been very helpful to me to overcome the pitfalls as an extension entomologist of having anecdotal information, which quite frankly, that's a lot of what we've been sharing, and I'm going to the pest control operators, what are you doing? And they tell me anecdotally, but we don't have that research-based information that extension people need to make qualified recommendations, but we're getting it, and that's a good thing. Just two examples here, killing them softly, the University of Kentucky work on January 2007, PCT, that had information that I can share with homeowners that the University of Kentucky found that if you launder articles that have bed bugs in it, or if you heat them in a dryer at 175 degrees for at least 5 minutes, you can kill them. That gives me research-based information that I can share with pest control operators. Very recently, Purdue University, which I can cite now, did this case study of controlling bed bugs in apartments, and they reported that in their study, limited study, but Gary, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but basically I think 85% of the infestations they found were around the beds and the box springs, 14% was found around couches and sofa, and 1% was found in other areas. That's great information that I can share as an extension entomologist rather than saying, well, Bob Pest Control does this and Fred Pest Control over here does that, and they both seem to be working. And again, industry and scientific meetings. I'm putting Deanie up here because Deanie is, she's two states away, but she allowed me to come up and see her lab, spend some time up in the lab with her and Tim, and that's how she feeds the bed bugs, by the way, on Tim. That's true love there. And the ESA meetings, and I brought up my little list here. And I was amazed as I was flying out on the plane, opening up the annual proceedings like many of you did, coming out on the plane, I was going, holy mackerel, there are 30 papers and posters on bed bugs at this session. I don't know if Artipel's here, but there are only 9 on German cockroaches. 20, 25 years ago when I was doing this, there would have been 30 or 40 on German cockroaches and not a single one on bed bugs, nor termite baiting. But what we have here, for example, just some of the universities that are involved, and I know I'm going to miss somebody and slight somebody, so I apologize, but Texas A&M, University of Minnesota, Ohio State, University of Kentucky, Simon Fraser out of Canada, Virginia Tech, University of Nebraska, University of Arkansas are all working on bed bugs and presenting here. Industry and consultants, I'm lumping you together, BASF, Orkin, Steritech, Cooper Pest Control, Ted Granowski, Harold Harlan, thank you for all your work, Harold, Dow, Bayer, And in government agencies, EPA, the Navy, California Department of Health, and Australian government researchers are all doing work presenting, and I know I missed some, but that is wonderful, and that is exactly what we need, and we need, even though there's a lot of papers and presentations here, we need more of it to help us through this issue. The lack of experience. Shreepot put up a picture of a caveman, which I remember back when a lot of you in grad school looked like that. I probably did too. Now you all have suit and ties on. But there, through recorded time, Greece, 400 BC, China, recordings, Middle Ages, even Shakespeare wrote about the bedbugs and Hamlet, and we know that Hamlet was a very stressed individual. And Hamlet says at one point, "With ho such bugs, and goblins in my life." And we all know what Hamlet wound up doing to himself at the end. But modern day, we don't have the experience of living with the bugs. All us baby boomers in here and the greatest generation a little older than us and whatever you are after us, the Gen Y or Gen X, we don't have the experience. We're just getting it now. And that makes it hard to, one, understand what has to be done for treating them, and two, living with them and appreciating it. I like this treatise on bed bugs by John Southall. Where he, back in 1700s, was probably having an extension meeting and was telling all the pest management professionals out there how and when bedbugs were first brought to England, their nature and several foods, I don't know what the foods would be, but several foods that they like, times in spawning, propagation, vulgar errors concerning them refuted. That's probably my favorite line. And I noticed that Mr. Southall, or perhaps Dr. Southall, at the end of the meeting, would sell nonpareil liquor or liqueur for destroying the bugs. So you could come to the meeting and you could leave the back of the room and buy something to treat them. And speaking of treating, talking about not having the historical perspective, and which, you know, it would be good if we could go back in time and talk to some of these folks, but also remember what they did. And here's some of the pictures of them hosing down the mattresses, very effectively, I might add, with DDT in the army barracks, and all kinds of treatments. But all kinds of treatments that they did were not necessarily the best treatments or good treatments that we would want to do today. I think that goes without saying. Morphology, biology, and behavior. Holy mackerel. Could go on for days about this and don't have time. But again, a lot of cockroach people are in here, and there's a lot of similarities, but there's some distinct differences from cockroaches that make bedbugs very hard to control, which I'd like to point out. Though I will mention that I still think we have large ranges here from time as egg, 4 days to 3 weeks, time as adult, 21 to 120 days. We have some of those ranges, and there's still some basic biology that is needed to try to close the gap on these wide natural life cycles. The habits harbor in clusters but are not social. If 10 years ago you showed me this little switch plate for the phone and I saw that spotting, I said, well, they're probably cockroaches. Well, there's not cockroaches, there's blood. That's a bed bug harborage spots. We all know about their thin ability to get in cracks and crevices and all the other places that they will go to. Just a couple things, and I've heard other people mention this. This is not completely original from me, but the bed bug's similar to cockroaches. The development is similar, pyrometabolism or hemimetabolism, depending on which source you're using these days. Their harborages are clustering, their spotting and mobility. Key difference is, of course, they don't groom. You know, you have a sucking, piercing mouth part, you're not grooming your buddy next to you. They don't have tarsal pads, they don't have the sticky pads between their tarsal claws, their aurolia, that would help pick up insecticides, probably making them harder to kill with contacts. And feeding, obviously we're not going to be using cockroach baits, they feed on us. So unless we're going to start taking these spot-on flea products like, you know, Program and First Line, I don't see that as a viable option. And we've lost a lot of that ability down the road. This goes to poor product selection, application, placement. And we're getting a lot of good information now of what is working and how it's working. And I'm not going to pick on any folks, but I've been out in the field where some PCOs are not using properly labeled products. We won't go any further than that. But they're using the really good, strong stuff that they kept in the back of the shop. The effective formulations, they've lost the ability to think about what are the best formulations for the environment in which I'm applying it. Is it a wall void with raw studs behind it or foam insulation or something that's going to soak in my emulsifiable concentrate? There's still a lot of PCOs, probably not in here, but out there that are on the other end of my phone line that still want to use the one product because they use the one product for everything. It works really well and it's not expensive, and they think they can go in and get effective bug control treatment with that one product. The proper application, the proper placements, and the post-treating monitoring, which is so important after the treatments are done. We need to get that message out. People like me, extension entomologists. And just before we leave this topic, DDT resistance in bed bugs was real. That specter is out there. We haven't talked much, or I haven't been at many meetings where we've talked about resistance. We used to kick it around a little bit with cockroaches, but I think we lost it. But I will just point out, too, that, and look at the authors here, one of the authors, Arnold Malice, research right there in 1964, they have resistant and non-resistant strains of bed bugs to DDT. Well, of course, the resistant strains didn't kill at all. It still took 3 days to kill 95% of the bed bugs on DDT contact only, that they're on the filter paper and can't move. So they were not easy to kill back then. So if you thought that it was a quick kill with the organochlorines or the organophosphates, I'm not sure that they were. And we have to be careful about the specter, a pitfall of resistance down the road. And finishing up here again, remember, people are stressed when they are cleaning, dealing with bed bugs. This is one apartment that the bed bugs were horrible. They were in adjacent rooms, and that's another key thing that the cockroach people will remember about. You need to look at the other rooms adjacent to the room that you're dealing with. But they're cleaning, discarding belongings, getting rid of pets in some cases, probably ill-advised, but doing it anyway. Disposing of very valuable furniture in many cases, which is probably ill-advised in many cases. Medical bills, destruction of self-image, taking legal actions. And if you want to see some stress, people go and look at some of the bed bug blogs on the internet. This can create a problem of parasitosis. A nice chapter in Malice about this. Parasitosis, and we don't have time to go talk about delusory or illusory, but I believe that bed bugs certainly can induce parasitosis, where people, even if they had the bed bugs initially, which can happen, they get rid of the bed bugs, or the professional does, they're still focused on every bite, every crawling sensation. If there's tons of pyrethroids in that room, some might cause skin sensations, and that can start the slippery slope of parasitosis, which is definitely a pitfall for pest management professionals. So they should not diagnose bites, they should not treat unless they know they have bed bugs, and they should set proper expectations. We're fortunate in South Carolina in that we have the medical university agromedicine program that now has an extension component. We can send them a parasitosis patients. We can also send them samples, and they can send us samples for identification. But just their October newsletter from Bill Simpson, Dr. Simpson, a medical doctor, said, "I saw three members of a family last week whose home had been treated multiple times for bed bugs due to recurring bites, diagnosed probably by the pest control operator." He doesn't say that in here, but they did the treatments. No bed bugs were ever found in the home, and when they looked closely and did looked at the active lesions on the children, they found that it was methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. So that's bleeding over beyond just the brown recluse spider problems or supposed problems, but also into the bed bug problems. So the pitfalls, as I finish up: misidentification, false expectations, poor preparation, lack of research-based information, but we're working on that, and that's great. Lack of experience, we're working on that. The morphology, biology of bed bugs, poor product selection, and parasitosis. And if I were able to summarize it, there's a company out there that sells office supply products, Staples, and everything's easy in Staples. I hope they don't get into the bed bug world, because bed bug management is not easy. And unless you realize and see the whole picture and use a multifaceted management program, again, making proper identification, thorough inspection, going through all the non-chemical options, the proper insecticides, selection and placement, formulations, and setting proper expectations in that follow-up for your treatments, you're going to have a hard time with the bed bugs. What is easy are my acknowledgments. Again, I want to recognize the re-release of Usinger's monograph of Simicity, the South Carolina Pest Control Association. I sent out a newsletter asking them to share information with me. I can't tell you how many came forward calling me, offering me to go out into the field with them. Especially Randy Bishop, an all-pro pest control in Charleston, went out multiple times with Randy, who has a wonderful bed bug program. Not cheap at all, but he's very thorough. And then the symposium organizers, Ted Grunowski, Shripat Comble, Stuart Mitchell, and our next speaker, wonderful speaker, Harold Harlan. Thank you.